from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Judith Martin is better known as Miss Manners, the etiquette expert whose advice column appears in over 200 newspapers in the United States and abroad. In her latest book, Miss Manners Minds Your Business, co-written with her son, Nicholas Ivor Martin, she explores the ins and outs of workplace conduct, from messy cubicles to office romance. Miss Manners will join us in studio, and she'll take your calls. Just don't forget to say please and thank you. Coming up after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of our forum program. Judith Martin began her career as a reporter for The Washington Post, covering the White House and social events, and went on to be a film and theater critic, and eventually became the widely syndicated author, nom de plume, Miss Manners, an advice columnist on, well, manners, as well as etiquette. By the way, she distinguishes between those as being eternal in the case of manners and of a particular time and place with respect to etiquette. And along with her son, Nicholas Ivor Martin, former publisher of the Washington Monthly and present head of the Chicago Lyric Opera, she recently published her 17th book, Miss Manners Minds Your Business, and she joins us for the second hour. And welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
It says on the flag of the book, a perfect lady in an imperfect society.
Yes.
Well, I'm delighted to have a perfect lady with me. How much do we have perfect ladies and perfect gentlemen around now? I mean, some would say, and I don't mean this to breach any etiquette here, but they would say, Miss Manners is talking about a different time, a different era, you know, when people were maybe a little more courtly or polite or there was greater civility. Now we have all this political enmity that we've been talking about in the first hour, and we have a different maybe standard that's operating for us.
Oh, well, political enmity, if you want to read the history of the Congress, nobody's shooting other people on the floor nowadays, which is a big advance. Yes, everybody thinks etiquette wants to go back to when everybody behaved perfectly, which I would love to do if you could tell me when that is. You forget the advances in etiquette that have been made even in the last few decades, which are extraordinary. Etiquette that they think of, this courtliness, was only for a few people.
It was often politicians with the patrician class more.
Politicians, well, they weren't necessarily so polite, but they were majorly often rude to people who were not of their set. Politicians in my recent memory used to think it charming and funny to make jokes about all kinds of people and bigoted jokes and remarks. And we still have a few who do that. One of the sports in Washington where I live is watching politicians self-destruct when they don't realize that there are certain things you cannot say anymore. That's a big advance.
That's what some call political correctness, which may just be being sensitive to other people in many instances like you're suggesting. But you once said that etiquette prevents us from, well, driving each other nuts.
Exactly so. It's a code of behavior and an agreement that if we're going to live in communities, I will restrain some of my impulses and you will restrain some of your more offensive impulses so that we can get along.
Sometimes you hear the argument, though, and I'm sure you have many times, rudeness deserves rudeness. You know, one should meet rudeness.
And that doubles the amount of rudeness in the world.
Two wrongs don't make a right, as my mother
always said. Well, they make a lot more wrong. And also, it's very ineffective. If you're rude back to somebody who was rude to you, they're going to be even ruder back to you, which is not to say that etiquette is defenseless, because it's not. That's the other misconception about etiquette, that it's always deferring to everyone. And if that were the case, even I wouldn't practice it. But there are ways of defending yourself without being rude.
Such as?
Well, it depends on what the offense is. Give me an example.
Well, if somebody pushes in front of you when you're in line or something of that sort, that's a rude thing to do, and it's also
and most people
gets people
yell,
angry and indignant.
Yes, yeah. And most people yell, you know, you're not here, go get out of there, and worse. If you say, you give the person face-saving way to get out, you say, excuse me, but the end of the line is back there.
And they say, shove off?
They don't generally do that because you've given them a way to save face with all those people who are about to hit them on the head to back out. The presumption of goodwill, even where it doesn't exist.
Depending on the kindness of strangers, in a way, are you?
No, you're depending on embarrassing them into behaving themselves.
Well, shame can be a very effective way.
It's a very effective weapon.
And your new book is really all about, to some extent, the lack of degree that people separate their private and their professional lives. And I wanted to move into that to some degree. But before we do, we had an interesting conversation before we went on the air just about, because I've been reading some of your columns, about somebody who wrote to you and said, if I say I will have this to a waiter or waitress, to a server. What is the right word, by the way, the politically correct word? To a wait person?
Server's fine.
Okay.
Or waiter or waitress, depending on
You say, I will have something, as opposed to, would you please bring me this? Now, you're not saying that please is wrong, but you're saying it's a business transaction, and it's okay to omit please.
Yes. I mean, I would never discourage anybody saying please or thank you or all those wonderful things. But you are not actually asking a favor there. You are placing an order. And if you are buying something in a store, you don't go up and say, may I please buy this? You say, I'd like to take this.
And yet I keep thinking about how my mother always said to say please.
Well, good for her, and keep saying it. I don't want to discourage you.
All right. Please answer another question for me, Ms. Manners. Actually, let's talk about the workplace, because most romances begin in the workplace, statistically, or at least that's where people meet each other as opposed to online. You think even to a greater numbers. I may be wrong about that. It's a close race, perhaps. But how do you express romantic interest for someone you're working with as opposed to stepping over the border into sexual harassment?
Well, that's a very tricky thing. And, of course, everybody's told don't have romances in the workplace for many reasons. Even if it goes well, people start charging favoritism or collusion. If it goes badly, you're stuck with that person and so on. But human nature is human nature. And, I mean, the entire military tries to stop that, and they can't, so how could I? But the problem really is that people do not separate, have separate social lives. Very often they're obliged to be at work a great deal of the time. And the workplace has fostered the idea that it should be their social milieu, which is very strange, that everybody, colleagues should be friends.
Oh, we're all family, too.
And family, yeah. Yes. Yes, my son was saying the other day one of these things that, by the way, he's director of operations at Lyric. He's not the head of the whole company. Big enough, but
yeah.
But he said the first job he ever got when he was still in high school, they said, now, we're a family. And he thought, I have a family. I wanted a job. The problem is that when these people turn out to be your rivals or they're your bosses or you leave the workplace, you ever noticed if people who are fired, their dear friends don't look them in the eye because they think it's catching. And if they...
it's also tough to know what to say.
Often, well, you know what they usually say? They usually say, oh, I have to work so hard because they're making me do your job too. And I feel real sorry for you. Only I was fired. But even if you retire after a long, successful career, people don't keep in touch. They say they will, but they don't really, because you were thrown together in work. I'm a great believer that you should have a cheerful, cooperative way of dealing with your colleagues and can be considerate and all of those things. But they're not your friends. You should make friends on the side. You should make friends who will stick with you if you're fired.
But if there's familial, warm familial feelings, is that necessarily something to be avoided in the workplace?
It should not be mistaken for family. You don't fire your grandmother just because she's not producing the way she used to.
Chief Faulkner said he would walk over his if it meant writing a poem like John Keats' Ode on a Grecian Urn. Talking with Ms. Manners, Judith Martin, and talking about the workplace and other things that involve etiquette and manners. What about a boss who is, prying?
That is a very difficult thing, and the law, to some extent, deals with that. There are, up to a point, there are tactful ways that you could refuse to answer personal questions. your boss has an unfair advantage over you because he's your boss. And that's why etiquette has something called noblesse oblige, where you're supposed to behave better to the people who can't safely talk back to you than to your superiors. But, of course, that's a difficult question.
Well, it is a difficult question. It's also a difficult question, you get into to some extent in your book, when coworkers who are supposed to be family and friends and all that are having a party and you don't necessarily want to be a participant.
I know. And the people ask me, well, how can I excuse myself? And I say, did you ever think of saying I have work to do? That's what you tell your family when you blow off their dinners, or your friends when you don't go to their weddings at the last minute. You say, well, I have work. I have to work. So why can't you say that on the job? They never think of that.
And you also have written about the electronic age and spamming and flaming, and make a point that I think really ought to be put up in neon signs, that that kind of behavior that goes on with flaming and spamming is as unacceptable electronically, or ought to be, as it is on a day-to-day basis in interactions between people.
Yes. People have the idea that they are safer when they're not physically seen. And, of course, online, a lot of people use false identities. But even if they use their own identities, it's the same phenomena that makes people who might be polite otherwise rude drivers, because they feel that they're encased and you can't see them. Well, you can see them. The cars have windows, but they're going by fast. A kind of rudeness comes out.
So it's a different phenomenon almost. I mean, road rage and flaming, they seem to come out when, like you say, you're encased or you're cocooned.
You think that you're protected. Yeah. And, of course, very often you're not. Now, on the when etiquette can't deal with something, we turn to the law. And people have been turning to the law only very much too quickly in many things. But the question of anonymous bullying and other behaviors that are illegal in other circumstances has not yet been solved by the law. How do you deal with that online?
Have you seen the Louis C.K. interview that went viral? I think he was on one of the talk shows, and he said kids will bully other kids because they don't see their response. They can't have any empathy.
Exactly.
So it's much
easier
for them to do it.
And it's not just kids.
That's why he says he doesn't want his kids to have cell phones.
Yes, it's not just children.
Talking to Miss Manners, do you find different politeness in different cities as you tour and all that?
Not too much. It's become sort of standardized. The people move around a lot in America. There are sections of the city country that pride themselves on being enormously polite. But you can find the same problems.
In California, you might be called Judith, though, rather than Miss Manners. I mean, there is this familiarity in California.
Instant intimacy, yeah. Which is sort of a shame. That's everywhere. It's not just in California. It's spread all over. A lot of these things do come from California, but then they spread eastward.
Well, if you have questions about etiquette or manners, we certainly invite you to join us. In fact, we welcome your calls, and you're cordially invited, politely invited, to become a participant in this program. Our toll-free number is available to you right now. It's 866-733-6786. And as I said, we welcome your calls for Ms. Manners, our guest, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. And you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But please feel free to join the program and become part of it. What do you do when somebody mispronounces a word or says something that is factually wrong? I mean, you want to be polite. You don't want to sound, you know, like you're slapping him on the knuckles or something. I have this problem constantly. I want to be kind.
I believe you teach, don't you?
Yeah, I do. But,
okay.
I don't want to sound didactic off the
Your students you should correct. You yeah. should not go around correcting other people. Even I don't do that, language or behavior. I'm not a meter maid, and it would be a very offensive thing to do.
There's
and
a sneaky
believe
way.
Believe me, they will find something that you've done wrong if you do that.
No, granted and conceded, but there is a sneaky way to do it. You just use that word that's mispronounced
yes,
in a sentence.
Yes, you can do that, and they might pick it up, yes.
And you said once that the worst breach of etiquette is greed.
That's the big problem now. Yes, people.
But
think,
is it a breach of etiquette? I mean, just being avaricious, one of the cardinal sins and all that. Huh?
Sure. And there is morals and manners are sort of on a continuum. But I'm talking about the expression of greed in which people who are not by any means poor or indigent go around begging. They use their weddings, their graduations, their house warmings, everything, to tell people to give them things, to ask for money. They will send people send out emails saying, kid will send to his parents' friends, I want to go to Europe this summer, and I it's going to cost this. Would you contribute? The expectation that guests will somehow remunerate you for your hospitality is everywhere. And I hear from the victims of this, but I also hear from the people who are out of their minds thinking that I will whitewash this practice. They'll say, well, what's the formal way of saying we want cash gifts? I said, gimme, gimme, gimme. You know, there is no polite way to shake people down.
Talking with National Syndicated Etiquette columnist Miss Manners, author of Miss Manners, Mind Your Business, co-author with her son, Nicholas Ivor Manners, and it explores the ins and outs of workplace conduct. Again, if you have questions about anything from messy cubicles to office romance, Miss Manners is here to take your calls. Let me, in fact, begin with our first caller from Hayward. Dan, you're on. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to know Miss Manners' perspective on, you know, dropping of dress codes in the workplace. It seems to me that dress codes served an equalizing kind of function, and nowadays, you know, dressing any way you can seems to put older folks who aren't willing to dress as hipsters in kind of a disadvantage. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, we thank you for the call, Ms. Manners.
Dress codes, major problem. Everybody denies that dress is symbolic. But of course it is. People read the clues from it. And everybody says, well, I just want to be comfortable and I want to express myself and that sort of thing. But heaven pity the person at the office who has to write the dress code or enforce it, because you get down to all kinds of nuances that you really don't want to argue about. That's why general professional dress was standard and a good thing. And then they started with casual Friday. And I understand here in Silicon Valley that people are doing formal Friday now. Because one of the problems of having a uniform mandated casualness, which is really what we have now in this country, is that people are starved for a bit of formality. But, yes, it's unprofessional. I mean, if you're going to have an operation, do you really want your surgeon to come around in dirty jeans and a T-shirt with a funny saying on it? Are you confident that he's going to wash his hands and turn professional when he opens up your body?
Well, the nice thing about doing radio, of course, is one doesn't have to be sartorially attired or, I mean, I can come in wearing whatever I like. However, for a while, I did the substitution of Talk of the Nation in Washington, and there was a dress code. You came in with a jacket and tie. It didn't matter if you were on the air, off the air, or whatever. That was just...
Do you know that many years ago, television and radio, people dressed in evening clothes in the evening? It was in, I think, David Brinkley's book.
That's fascinating. No, I didn't know that. What do you tell parents who say to you, my kid just doesn't think manners or etiquette are important, and I can't convince, this is often true probably about teenagers, but even younger children, you know, can't convince them of its importance.
No, teenagers don't think manners are not important. They think that the context doesn't matter and that the manners that they rigidly observe with their peers are all right everywhere. That's the problem. But there is nothing more rigid in manners, but dress, how you address people, hierarchy, everything, than a teenage gang. They're very strict about that. And what do I tell parents? I hope their children are not in gangs, but tell them it's, the question is context, and they will care when they want approval from, they want to get into a certain school, they want a job, they fall in love, and they want the parents of the person they're in love with not to despise them, then they will notice that there are various ways of behaving.
Practical reasons.
Other than, yes, yeah. Of course.
Another call. We go to Half Moon Bay. Rebecca, join us. You're on Forum.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm delighted to talk to you today. I was raised in a house where manners were really emphasized, and one thing that my mother really opposed was swearing. So I was raised to be a non-swearer, and I find myself in a world of swearing, and it's not to say that I'm a prude or I'm against swearing per se, but I find excessive swearing to be offensive, the way that, you know, the way that my mom raised me. And I'm wondering what a polite way to ask people to refrain from that behavior around me.
Well, first of all, it's offensive because it's meant to be offensive. That's why your mother didn't like it. And the it changes sometimes. There are words that were highly offensive once and are less so now. But you still can't go around training, being mother to your coworkers. Maintain your own standard. Don't go down to the lowest common denominator. But your mother had a perfect right to teach you properly. You do not have that same jurisdiction over other people, which is a shame. I wish they did. I wish I did.
Thank you, Rebecca, for the call. We have a guest observing us today, Joyce Turley, and her daughter, and she told me that one of the most valuable courses she took at Penn State was a one-unit course in etiquette. Should they be teaching etiquette in high school, college?
No, they should be teaching it at home. But they have to do remedial work because it isn't being done in the homes. Even by parents of extreme goodwill, they say to their children, oh, just be yourself. No. Nobody knows what that means, and it's very useless advice instead of explaining how the civilization works to their children. But it's a shame that remedial work has to be done, is all I can say.
Janet, you're our next caller. Thanks for waiting, and join us, please.
Hi, thank you. You know, I work a lot with men. And in the workplace, in the country generally, I think there's, for group discussions, there's developed this kind of this real belligerent tone of wanting to turn everything into an argument. And it's led to a lot of interrupting. And being interrupted really just makes me extremely angry. So what I do when somebody interrupts me in a discussion, I realize for it to be successful, I have to stop talking. Mm-hmm. And I decided to not stop talking. And, I mean, I'm just nice as pie. And I keep a smile on my face, and I continue sharing my information, you know, and nodding and then, you know, keeping my body language very friendly, but I don't stop talking until the interrupter stops interrupting.
Are you losing out by this?
No.
Oh, good.
No,
okay,
but,
fine.
But it requires a firm commitment. You know, don't do it until you're ready. I recommend mm-hmm. practicing, because if you stop and let the interrupter win, then what you've just taught them is keep going.
All right, I don't want to interrupt you, but we're coming up on a break here. And when we come back, actually, let's hear what you have to say about interruptions when we return. Again, we're talking to Ms. Manners, and you can join us. Go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or go to our Facebook page, or email us, forum@kqed.org. And again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Ms. Manners, Mind Your Business is the new book, co-written with her son, Nicholas Ivor Manners, who, she says, she said, take your son to work. No, put your son to work. When we return on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum, and we're spending this hour with Judith Martin, better known as Miss Manners, the etiquette expert whose advice column appears in over 200 newspapers, both here in the United States and abroad. And her latest book is called Miss Manners, Mind Your Business, co-written with her son, Nicholas Ivor Martin, not Nicholas Miver, Nicholas Ivor Manners, which happens frequently, apparently. And in it, they explore the ins and outs of workplace conduct, from everything from messy cubicles to office romance. And she's with us in studio and answering your questions. We're going to go to more of your calls and go to emails here in just a moment. But talking about interrupting, and I particularly hear complaints like from that last caller, that follow along gender lines, men running roughshod over women.
Yes, it happens. And you don't have to be rude back, but you should say, excuse me, I'm not finished yet. I'd be delighted to hear what you have to say when I'm finished.
Lulu writes, I will be ecstatic if Miss Manners answers my question. I am a longtime reader, and in a social context, when I encounter somebody who is behaving rudely and appears immune to all subtlety, I normally just try to avoid that person. However, if I have a direct report at work who is alienating everyone else with his or her behavior and who is not picking up on other people's polite suggestions, I feel some obligation to offer feedback because if the person's behavior does not change, he or she will eventually be fired. What is the most effective and polite way to suggest behavioral changes in a person who appears not to have picked up on other employees' cues?
Well, especially if you have jurisdiction over that person, if you are the superior, you'd say, I'm hearing a lot of talk about your behavior, and that's affecting people, and I wonder if there's a problem there, if I can give you some advice about
their immediate response might be, who's been talking about me?
I'm not at liberty to say. But as we say, it's a very famous Washington statement, I'm not at liberty to say. I don't want to get into the details, but the you seem to offend people, and I don't really know why. Do you?
So you put it as a question.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good. And often the answer is, no, I don't know why I offend people. I can't imagine why I offend
people. Let's examine your behavior.
And then you can get into specifics.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Robert asks, this is a curious question. Would Miss Manners comment on the common response, no problem, when we, for example, ask for water with no ice?
People are objecting to that because the response, the conventional response is you're welcome when somebody has done something and says thank you. The response should be, you're welcome. I'm not willing to go to the ramparts over that. The language changes a bit as etiquette does. And in other languages, that's what people say. In French, it's il n'y a pas de quoi. In Spanish, it's de nada.
Or no problema.
No, it's de nada.
De nada is like, but you're welcome, yeah.
But it means of nothing.
Yeah,
and
literally.
So I'm not willing to fight too much over that, although I have an actual prejudice in favor of saying you're welcome. But it's not one of the things that drives me crazy.
Not to the ramparts. Facebook page, Danielle writes, please ask what she believes is responsible for the slow death of the RSVP. Is it simply that so many people are too busy and overscheduled today, or are there other factors behind this?
Yes, the factor is called rudeness. It's the idea people think that, well, they're so spontaneous that they can't decide whether they want to do something until the last minute, and no feeling whatsoever for the host. This is this kind of one-sided etiquette that people are always trying to say is legitimate only from their point of view. And I hear all the time, well, nobody cares if you answer invitations anymore. Well, nobody cares except the host who will excuse himself by or herself by saying, I need to know how much food to provide. I need to know this. But it's an insult. If I invite you to something, all you have to say is, I'm so sorry I can't come if you don't want to go. But it's an insult to ignore it.
You know what else is an insult? I actually write about this in a book that I'm working on, and a lot of people don't take it as an insult. When you make a call and you don't get a call back.
Well, it depends on the call. I mean, maybe it's a robocall and telling you to buy something.
No. I mean, somebody you know or you're acquainted with and you can leave a message. A lot of people just don't return phone calls or they say, I'm too busy or something like that. But it's an insult.
A lot of younger people are not using the telephone at all. They use texting.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so they probably don't know you've called.
Not that many younger people in my life. No,
but all right.
Here's John who writes, I miss all that face slapping in the movies, serious and comedic. Is there ever an occasion where a slap on the face is appropriate?
Yes. There are, when people make lewd remarks to women, the women get embarrassed and they say, oh, I don't want to be prudish, but, and all that. The slap in the face was a very nice retort.
Of course, you could get nabbed for assault and battery now by slapping.
Yes, I'm really not advocating violence, actually. So I'm really thinking more of a psychological slap in the face than a physical one.
Or a verbal, yes. And here's a caller from Nevada City. James, welcome.
Good morning. I remember Lao Tzu saying that when people lose their way and don't know how to react to other people, that's where manners are taught them, so they won't make a complete fool out of themselves. Many people are very polite and schooled in etiquette, but can leave you feeling very cold when you interact with them. So I would like to emphasize it's not so much the words that are used, it's the feeling behind the words and the feeling that you're left with when you're done relating with a person that's more important to me than how polished their manners are and their etiquette.
Okay. Response from Ms. Manners.
Yes, you're thinking of etiquette as a mere formality that, which it is often, that people are not sincere about. It is the form, and if you to tell whether people are sincere or not is a lot harder than to see if they have followed the formula. Let me give you an example. What you said about when you don't know what to say. A lot of people say they don't know what to say when somebody's died. So spontaneously, they say, well, he didn't really take very good care of himself, or I know she was sick for a long time. You're probably better off. And awful, awful things like this that just devastate the bereaved. And they could resort to the conventional thing of saying, I'm so sorry. Yes, we want people to have good hearts, but if they, and that is the most important thing, I'm not denying that, but if they have good hearts and yet stumble around saying things that are hurtful, it's not going to be
You just say, I give my condolences to you or my sympathies or I'm sorry.
Yes.
I mean, those are the
easiest
things.
Those are all the conventional things that one says.
And they're conventional and they can come from the heart. What bothers
me. But even
if
they don't come from the heart, it's
a nice convention.
People who don't care, it is a nice convention, yes.
What bothers me is when people say, I hope you find closure, you know, as if.
I hate that. I hate that.
It gets me crazy. It gets my blood boiling.
Me too.
First of all, you know, when you lose somebody you love and you're grieving over it your whole life perhaps,
exactly.
Where's closure?
Exactly. I hate that. And they try to help you to closure, which is, oh, well, you know, don't you think you should get out and around because they have their steps that you should. Of course, if you've lost somebody you love, you're going to feel that your entire life.
Well, we asked our listeners on Facebook, what breaches in etiquette plague your workplace? This new book of Ms. Manners and her son is about breaches of etiquette in the workplace and what to do about manners in the workplace. I'll give you a couple of examples here. Barbie says, loud telephone conversations over speakerphone in an open plane office setting and stealing other people's food for the communal fridge. And James writes, when I have to eat lunch at my desk and someone comments on my food choices, I have limited options. Get off my back. Interesting about food here. I mean,
there's a lot about food. Yes, that people don't that food that other people eat. They don't like the way it smells. People steal food, as they say. They don't clean up after themselves if there's a communal little kitchen, and so on and so on. The idea of throwing everybody, all workers, in together was, of course, motivated by the fact that it's cheaper to have an open space than it is to have individual offices. But it was justified by the idea that they would all get to be friends and love one another. And when your friend does something like that, you have some tolerance. Maybe they push you to the brink, but it's a little different than when your coworker does it. And again, there's this scheme of we're all pals, and we all have to put up with everybody's little habits. And everybody's little habits revolt people who don't really have any warm feelings for them.
A lot of companies will just have them eat together to keep them working. I mean, so they don't go out for lunch or so they stay within the confines of the company and all that sort of thing. Just wonder, though, you know, another thing, I guess this comes down often to pet peeves. It drives my siblings crazier than it drives me, but they will feel compelled to say something when we're sitting in a restaurant and people are talking really loudly and they're not aware of the fact that somebody may be trying to talk or speak in a modulated tone of voice next to them. Or they'll be making a lot of noise or they'll be acting, you know, outrageously in terms of just the noise level, what's audible.
What do your siblings do?
My siblings get angry.
But do they go over and confront the people?
Yeah, they do. They confront them.
Well, see, we've had a number of examples today here of people want to go around correcting other people, which
being
you can't
moral
do.
Custodians. Yeah.
Yes. What you can do in that case is go to the manager of the restaurant and say, you know, we came here to eat and talk and we can't hear ourselves think. And he can either, or she, move you or gently, I hope, tell those people to be a little quieter, or lose your business. But yeah. You don't go around scolding other people.
Sometimes the owner isn't there or the owner doesn't want to get involved.
Somebody's in charge or it would be a free-for-all.
It can be tough in those situations, though. I mean, especially when people feel that they're being invaded.
Well, then, I mean, if you really must correct someone else, again, you give them a face-saving way and you go over and say, you're all having a wonderful time, and I hear that, but the noise is a little loud, and we can't really hear ourselves.
And they say, blank you.
You're running in a rough crowd there.
No, I just
people
know human behavior.
People don't take advantage of the opportunity to be nice.
Than your politesse allows. I'm just aware of my own species in a different way.
You'd be surprised about how many people, if you treat them as if they were polite, even when they're not, will go to that.
No, I think that's generally true. But there are those exceptions. And we'll go to some more calls here. Paige joins us next. Hi, Paige.
Hello. How are you?
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, I'm calling in just to comment. So I got laid off from a company I worked for 10 years. And you noted, commented earlier about how when you get fired, people don't contact you. Well, I've gotten laid off and I haven't heard from people. Now, fortunately, I have many other friends, but it was just really disappointing. And I don't know what you can do with that, but I've moved on. So.
This is a classic example of why they were not your friends, they were your colleagues, and you had the good sense to make real friends. And your real friends are still with you.
Yes. The other comment I wanted to make, and the world is good out there, I had a rude neighbor who wanted a parking space, and I wanted it, and we kind of fought about it, and I won, and I came home, and he came to my house and apologized. So there is good in the world. So,
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Actually, it just reminded me of that call of somebody. I got into a automobile kind of accident. I mean, it wasn't an accident, but actually I cut someone off and I realized I cut him off. And he came to a full stop and got out of the car and road rage, you know, I had cut him off, you dare cut me off and everything like this. And my immediate response was to gesture to him as he was coming toward the car. I mean, I'm thinking, well, if I got a battle with this guy, I got a battle with him. Didn't want to, obviously. But I said, I'm sorry. I mouthed the words, I'm sorry, and lifted my shoulders and said it sincerely, and he waved and turned around and left.
Well, there you are. Yes. So he didn't tell you to...
But another guy might have come at me with the billy club. I mean,
no, but you apologized, so you diffused it.
Yeah, I did diffuse it, he says proudly. All right, here's Karen who writes, I had an experience in my yoga class that I would like to run by Miss Manners. A student came into the class very late, about 20 minutes, and the instructor had me move to accommodate the student. I almost didn't say anything, but this guy did ruin my flow. So I told him that he ruined my class in a very matter-of-fact way. I think that people sometimes have to tell others when they are acting inconsiderately. Otherwise, they think their behavior is not negatively affecting others.
But why didn't she tell the yoga instructor? The yoga instructor was the person who told her to move.
Well, also brings up an interesting point. As a teacher, I don't like it when students come in late. And I don't, on the one hand, want to embarrass them. But on the other hand, I feel that they should be at least aware of the fact that they're coming up late.
Well,
coming in late.
As a professor, you can make the rules there. And you can say, I will not accept people coming in late.
And simply turn the student away.
Mm-hmm.
But the student may have had all kinds of problems getting to class on time. Grandmother
Everybody
died.
Has yeah, problems. Well, yes. Okay.
No, some of them are legitimate problems. Though.
Okay, then take them in. I'm not making the rules for you. I'm just saying that you can maintain certain standards.
Well, here's something interesting that happened. I don't mind students calling me by my first name. In fact, I welcome it sometimes.
Why?
It's okay. I don't mind it. That's all. I mean, I come out of the 60s and things are much more relaxed.
But they're not your equals. If they were and your friends, you couldn't fail them.
It's okay. I mean, Professor Krasny, Michael Krasny, Mr. Krasny. On the air, it's all Michael, of course. But somehow, when someone calls me by my last name, I don't like it. I mean, it goes back to high school or something. And recently, I received an email from a student, and it said Krasny, but it was actually my name was spelled wrong too. So I felt a compulsion to be corrective, and I said, probably not the best idea to call your professors by their last name. And also, you might learn to spell my name. And then talked about the business that she had brought up in the email.
You can correct your students. That's what you're there for. That's a different situation than going around correcting people in restaurants and grocery lines and wherever. The students are there to learn from you. Correct them by all means.
But I'm not Miss Manners.
No,
listen to you. They may not listen to me. I'm Professor Krasny. What do they have to listen to this guy for?
Because you hold a lot of power over them. That's why they have to listen to you.
Well, power of the great is not like the power of the purse. But let me go to some more calls here. Randy, join us. Hi. I'm sorry. Helen joins us. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
I have a question for Miss Manner. My husband and I used to throw a lot of parties, and then we used to cook ourselves and everything. But now we're getting old. We don't have that much energy. And we like to throw parties still. Is it rude to invite people and throw a potluck party?
If it's a very clear potluck party, they are there are many instances now when people have just thrown aside the whole principle of hospitality and they expect their guests to cater for them. Sometimes they even charge them. If you have been entertaining a long time and these people know that you are hospitable, you could say, what about we do a potluck party? And then your rules should be very flexible of what do you feel like bringing and so on. It's not the same as being the host of a party, but you can have those get-togethers if they are if they're made very clear.
And thank you, Helen, for the call. Now, here's a question you might get here rather than, well, Kansas City, for example. Paul writes, moving from Kansas City to Berkeley, I find a lot more gender diversity that's especially ambiguous. How does one politely address and conduct discourse with others when one can't quite tell if the other is a gal, a fella, or a combination of the two without being gracious and not offensive or awkward?
You don't really need to know.
That's my thought. Exactly. Exactly.
Just treat that person like a human being.
You don't have to determine. Anna writes, what's a polite way to talk to coworkers about overpowering fragrance?
You say, and that's a big problem in the workplace.
Not perfumes.
Not everybody. Perfumes.
We're thinking about other kinds of odors.
It's both. Bad smells and even perfumes that some people are allergic to or they don't like and so on. If it's actually a perfume or a product, then you can say you have that wonderful perfume, but I'm sorry if it's affecting me and you should save it. You know, would you mind saving it for your social life? If you've got a really smelly person, and apparently half of America does because I get these letters all the time, you have to tell somebody in authority who will issue a general thing saying we need a higher hygiene standard around here so you don't just target and embarrass one individual.
Do you always curb your impulses? I mean, is there ever been a time when you just had to respond rudely to rudeness? Or?
Do I always curb my impulses?
Yeah.
Certainly not. I wouldn't be a human being.
Well, no, I'm talking about in these
situations. Do I act rudely?
Yeah.
No, I do not.
Never?
No. Why should I?
Well, okay. We go to Portola Valley and we welcome Randy on the air. Hi, Randy.
Thanks so much, Michael. I'm a huge fan of your show. My question is this. Both my adult children who live out of state are engaged to be married in 2014, and I'd like to throw a double engagement party. My question is, can I invite, and it's no gifts, can I invite people who are not going to be invited to the weddings to come, who I know want to come? Can I do that?
And let me tell you how to do it. The engagement party is a relatively new phenomenon. The old engagement party was just a party at which it was a surprise announcement. You can't make surprise announcements anymore because the kids have posted it all on Facebook long ago. What you can do is throw a party for them, for your friends to meet your new son-in-law, daughter-in-law-to-be. And that's, by the way, one of the ways of dealing with the avoiding them feeling they have to bring presents. You just say it's a party. Don't call it an engagement party. Say it's a party to introduce my future son-in-law and daughter-in-law or whatever.
Perfect.
They are.
Thank you so much for
You're
the
welcome.
Advice.
Thank you for the call. And here's Celino who writes, I've found, especially in the workplace, people often frame a difference of opinion as being rude in order to disqualify another. Does Miss Manners have any advice on the proper way to disagree with a boss or coworkers?
Who say you're rude? Where do you work? I'll come over
it's
and I'll
Facebook
make the decision.
All right. It's a lot is framing, you know, and I think the caller brings up an interesting point, though. Somebody can frame something that goes completely dissonant to your what you're saying or what you're – I mean, it happens all the time, obviously.
Well, then you say, I think you misunderstand me.
Yeah. Here's Paul from Oakland who writes, I still remember and tell people about one of my favorite bits from Herb Cain's column at the height of the women's rights movement. Entering a building, a woman snapped at a man, "You don't have to hold the door just because I'm a lady." And he replied, "I didn't. I held it because I'm a gentleman." My favorite insult reportedly came from a Quaker who told the offender, "I trust thy mother shall punish thee when thou hast returned to thy kennel."
Dear.
Here's a tweet from Tejas. It says, "What is Ms. Manners' perspective on bargaining in a culture where bargaining is a crucial part of shopping? How can I be polite while I need to be aggressive to get the deal?"
It's a sport in certain circumstances, and it should be enjoyable to both parties. For instance, I love to go to antique shows and things, and there's bargaining there. And you wouldn't bargain in a department store, but you would bargain at an antique show. And you'd say, "Oh, I'd love to have it, but it's over my limit." And the person says, "But look how wonderful it is." "Yes, it is. It is. Although I have something like it that I got a little bit cheaper," and so on. It's a battle of wits, and both people should enjoy it.
And we'll enjoy maybe another call. John, hi, you're on.
Hi there. I'd like to get your opinion on inviting your boss to your wedding. Specifically, my fiance and I are getting married in the spring. With her coworkers, she works very closely with them and considers them good friends and would like to invite them. Unfortunately, the boss, she doesn't work as closely with them, but, you know, her boss is not a very nice person and not someone who we would otherwise consider inviting if it wasn't for the fact that she has some position of authority, and both her and her parents point out that it might be good to, you know, if she gets offended by not getting invited, it might be best for your own professional career ambitions to invite this person. And I'd like to get your opinion on that. Thanks.
It's a shame to have that problem. If your fiancé's has really made friends at her workplace, and people do, people whom you see outside of the workplace, people whom you care about, she should certainly invite them. If that description covers the entire workplace, she should include the boss, because otherwise the boss seems to have been singled out not to be invited. But if she has your fiancé has just chosen the people to whom she's really close and the boss is not one of them, the boss may not be insulted. The boss, she may be relieved.
And we thank the caller. Here's Chris, who writes, "I often find myself ensnared in conversations at work that take time away from and distract me from my work. These are not conversations that pertain to work, and they veer beyond the usual pleasantries into idle chatter. How do I politely get out of these chats?"
Memorize this phrase: "Excuse me, I have work to do."
Easy enough. Boy, getting a lot of emails and things about smelly food in the office.
I know.
It's a big problem, isn't it? And here's another regional difference that Gideon, our caller, wants to bring up. Hi, Gideon.
Thanks for taking my call. I just moved out to San Francisco from Charleston, South Carolina. I am in my early 20s, so I'm still meeting a lot of my friends' parents out here. And coming from the South, I was definitely raised to say, you know, yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. But I often get the impression when I meet friends' parents from the North or from California that when I say yes, ma'am, or yes, sir, they kind of get turned off and think that I'm trying to impress them. Should I change the way I greet parents now that I'm out of, you know, the usual, out of the South, I guess?
Well, you are trying to impress them, and good for you. You know why they're demurring? For a ridiculous reason is that people say, "Well, it makes me feel old." Well, they are older. You know, this shame of aging is a ridiculous thing that I've been railing against for some time.
Feeling that they don't want that formality, though, can't it? That they want to be looser?
Well, if they don't want the formality, they can say, "Please call me," and use their first names. That's the privilege they have. I'm guessing that an awful lot of them think that's really charming.
What do you think is right, by the way, about, you know, when somebody's about to get married, should they call their in-laws by their first names or Mr. or Miss or Mom or Dad? I mean, I guess it depends on what maybe the in-laws want entirely.
Exactly so. It's the in-laws' call, not the young people's call. And they have a hard time call if it's mom and, you know, mother and father. A lot of people have a hard time with that. But if it pleases the in-laws, fine, you do it.
I had a hard time the first time somebody called me sir. I thought, how old am I now that I'm being called sir?
It's a term of respect.
No, I
realize
that.
Why are you turning away respect?
No. But I'm talking about when I was in my 20s and I was first called sir. It just seemed I'm too young to be called sir.
It's a sign of respect, not of age.
Well, you know, also people who have been in the service will say ma'am and sir.
Of course they will.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, listen, writes Michael, please ask your guests about this current trend of being invited to birthday parties in expensive San Francisco restaurants, being asked to partake of pre-ordered menus and drinks lists, and then end up splitting a pretty heavy bill, which to me came completely unexpected. Should the host have informed us?
I would have declined any such invitation. This is very widespread. I'd like to give a party in honor of the person I esteem most, myself. People giving their own birthday parties and expecting others to pay. Don't go. I think it's an imposition on the guests.
Well,
or not guests. They're paying clients.
A good polite way to end, because we've come to the end of the hour. A listener from Bernal named Darcy writes, Dear Michael and Miss Manners, thanks for today's show. I feel that if we spread a thin layer of Miss Manners everywhere, the world would be a better place. Your powerful clarity is inspiring. I will try and swear less.
Thank
There's
you.
A vow.
Thank you.
Anybody else wants to make a vow, I guess you can direct it to Miss Manners. Thank you for being with us. Pleasure to have you.
It was fun.
The book Miss Manners, Minds Your Business by Judith Martin and Nicholas Ivor Martin. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. You can continue this conversation about manners and etiquette by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program. Malcolm Gladwell tomorrow on our 10 o'clock hour. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.